I think we can start right away. I mean, there will be not many people who come. I know this is the last session, last workshop session, and of the 3 days conference. And then outside is snow, and everybody ready to get home and to get rest for tomorrow, the Sunday, right? So probably not many people will show up. And in fact, that's why this session is on Saturday only, because somehow the leadership group might thought that not many people may be interested in Korean worship service, things like that. So that's fine. There's one or two people gathered in my name. No, I used to say to my kids. Okay. Well, anyway, let me introduce myself to you. And I am, my name is Won Lee, and I was born and reared and studied, get an undergraduate degree in Korea, and I came to United States as an immigrant, which means at age 23. So I'm a really first generation Korean. And then my father was a pastor, and he's retired, so I'm PK. So I know the Christian worship service from the get-go. And I came to United States. I went to Princeton Theological Seminary in New Jersey. And I had my Master of Divinity program, internship in PCSU Church in the Bryn Mawr in Philadelphia for the 1 year. And then I had my PhD in Old Testament, not in church music or church history, in Old Testament under the tutelage of Jewish rabbis at the Claremont Graduate School in Southern California. So I was in East Coast and West Coast, and I'm now Midwest. And I came from the East Asia to come to the West, the United States. So I'm traveling back and forth. And those kind of my itinerary has to do with my intellectual journey as well, the faith journey as well. Because the Eastern ideas of reality is much more kind of intrinsic, holistic, and harmony is more important. The Western ideas tend to be focusing on much more logical, much more step by step. And I could see some of those kind of ethos are very much pervasive in every day of life. If I go to TGIF, and then the waiter will come and ask me, what do you want to drink first? They will not ask you dessert first. They will ask, what do you drink? And then salad. And then main dish. And then each of salad main dish has all kind of the emphasis on what you like, what kind of dressing you want, and how do you cook, and do you want to have a potato on the side, or sour cream or butter on the side or on the top. So everything has to be all itemized and according to particular order. Then you'll have a dessert, right? That's the thing. It's very much organized in that way. But when you go to a Korean restaurant, you order the one dish, and they will bring you five or six different side dishes. They come with you. You do not order it, but it comes with you. Otherwise, that particular main dish doesn't function as a main dish. It's much more horizontal, not a vertical. Here, I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but it's just simply recognizing that there are differences. There's different way of looking at things, different way of perceiving the reality, different way of organizing things. So some of those kind of the attitude toward life is also has to do with our conceptual mind and our way of worshiping and reading the scripture and so on and so forth. So I've been in the Korean community and all of my life. And then as soon as I come to Calvin College, I've been soaking into the so-called CLC community. So I worship at the local CLC church in Kalamazoo Avenue for 18 years. So I have been in both camp, rather, quite deeply. Immersed myself into those kind of communities as much as possible, learn from it. So that I can see now at this point, I can see, oh, there's some good things. Oh, there is some good things. There are different ways of doing it. So that I can say something kind of a positive and constructive way of making the bridge between these two different ways of worshiping, ways of thinking. And I have one of my best friends, a Chinese American, who used to teach at Calvin. And now he's in Nebraska. Hey, my pastor. My pastor at the Boston Scripture. Yes, yes, great. And his name is Peter Siro, and he's a sociologist, and he's a Chinese, second generation Chinese. His father was the Chinese pastor, CLC pastor. So he's been moving around to quite a bit all over the world. But one day he confessed to me that, hey, wherever I go Chinatown in that country. I go to France, I go to Chinatown in France. I go to Latin America, then I go to Chinatown in Latin America. Which means that even though physically you are in different country, you're never outside of your own ethnic, your own particular kind of communities. Sometimes many immigrants have that kind of practices. Look at the many Korean-American students at Calvin College. They come here, but they go to Korean church. I don't blame them, because that is a home for them, and spiritually, and culturally, and food-wise, and smell-wise, and language-wise, it's wonderful, be comfortable. But by doing so, although your body is in the United States or Grand Rapids, you have not been really experienced what the CLC Church is all about, what the Dutch community is all about. So this is a little bit of the kind of blessing and curse when you are in that situation. So somehow, I put myself into those two different camps and try to see what are these something that we can learn from each other rather than criticizing each other. So today, I have only of an hour. So what I prepared for you is giving you a big picture and a very general picture about what happened when Korean Christians worship and what kind of things that the Korean Christian worship service might have some distinctiveness. Perhaps it's not really that distinctive, but perhaps there is something behind of a practice. So some of those things that I will highlight to you, I will make some observations, and then probably some of you have some questions, then I can entertain some of those questions as well. But before we go on to that, I received this wonderful hymnal, and our church is adopted, and we are going to use this one as well. So I'm looking at the index side and try to find out how many Korean hymns actually included in this massive new hymnal. So if you can, if you have a page 1054. Welcome. Please come in. When you look at the page 1054, and there is text in languages other than English. So there is all the list of it. Okay. So I found that there's a Korean. How many? There's 8 of them. So wow, there's a lot of Korean hymns are actually included in this massive one. And then I check every single one of them. Out of 8, only one is composed by Korean. 7 of them. The languages that they're doing it. The languages are, when I look at those things, they are all kind of American hymns, so to speak, Western hymns, have a translate into Korean. So I've been used to all of that, but there is only one is composed by a Korean composer and has a Korean language and has particularly Korean tune. All the rest of them are just Western tune, so to speak. There is no traditional Korean tune involved in this hymnal.
Arirang?
Arirang is one of them. There's a very tune that is very folk, the song in Korea. And sometimes if you put the different language in it, then there has a different kind of hymns that you can get out of it. But Arirang, I have not found the Arirang right here. But here, hymn number 905, if you have one, 905. And our church has the Elizabeth and encouraged to include many different hymns so that this particular Come Now, O Prince of Peace, we sang several times. So whenever in our congregation we sing, they ask me to come and to sing the leading the congregation song because this is a Korean language. In fact, we are the only Korean family in that congregation. And anyway, so here we have a Come Now, O Prince of Peace. Look at the melody of it. So let me sing and the first verse in Korean, and you can feel the, whether there is a difference.
Oh, so, so, oh, so, so, 평화의 임금, 우리가 머무르게 하소서.
Any different, strange flavor of this tune? Not much, isn't it? But in fact, this particular tune has a Korean flavor to it. When you translate it into American, the Western scale, it loses that particular flavor. So it goes this way.
Oh, so, 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 평화의 임금, 우리가 몸 미루게 하소서.
See that? There's a different melodies to it. So sometimes we use this Western octave, then we lose some of those particular kind of flavor and nuance of a traditional the Korean music. Or probably it has to do with all kinds of different cultures. And so some of those things, I like it, I love it, and so I sing this one. But this particular phenomenon, 8 hymns in Korean, out of 8, only one has a Korean tune. Even the Korean tune is a little bit westernized. That is the exact situation in Korean worship practices. When you go to Korea, or when you go to any Korean church in the United States, you will not really see any differences. They have a worship service at the beginning, calling and prayer of confessions, the liturgy is very same, and there's a sermon is right in the middle, or sometimes sermon is at the end. So in terms of liturgy, in terms of the hymn singing, you will not see any difference. So you will say almost 90% of Korean Christian worship service is very similar to what you worship every single Sunday here. Well, of course, that has to do with the missionary influence, because it's almost 150 years ago, Protestants, and almost 200 years ago, the Jesuits came to Korea and to spread the gospel. Because of that, all the worship service are very much influenced by the Western missionaries' the understanding of a worship. Then the question is, this is a question that I try to answer. What happened when Korean Christians worship? Is there any distinctiveness of it? Even though on the surface level, everything seems to be very similar, liturgically and hymn selection-wise, is there any different thoughts, different concepts, different content and embedded in it? So that even though we are wearing similar clothes, but I am Korean, but many of you are Americans. So that the content and form, how they are intertwined each other. If we understand that some of those conceptual background of Korean worship practices, then we will say, yes, I can see that there are some distinctiveness of a Korean Christian worships. That is what I'm trying to getting at. So even though when you go to Korea or all other the Korean American church in the state, and you will sing exactly same hymns that you used to, but in a different language, but there are much more conceptually deeper and different kind of assumptions of it. But that is what I'm getting that out. In order to do that, here you go. I made a handout for you. To understand the Korean Christian worship service, I will have only two prompts, although there are many, many different ways to understand. Let's have the foundational aspect, because Korea have many religious traditions already in it. Before Christianity entered into Korea, Koreans are already religious people. And there's a shamanistic, there is a Buddhistic, and there's Confucianistic. There are three major religions. And you will say, probably the word religion in and of itself is not appropriate for Asian psyche. Because for us, religion means it's a system of thoughts. Particular kind of ideas and come together, make a very coherent. Yes. So the concept of religion in and of itself is very foreign in Asian psyche. In Asian psyche, we do not have the system of thoughts, we have lifestyle. Or almost similar things as teaching. The word 종교, which is religion, is how the Japanese and translate the Western ideas into Chinese characters. That's the how we started from only probably 1800 on. So we are much more into the lifestyle or teaching. So when you can write in a Chinese character, it says, 불교 means the teaching of Buddha. 유교 means teaching of Confucius. 도교 means teaching of the way. And then now the Christianity translated into Korean, 기독교, which means teaching of Christ. So you can see that the same, the word 교, that's the teaching part. So this is very much is the permeated through entire life setting. So that is a something fundamentally a different kind of concept about the religion. But for the sake of our presentation, and let's focusing on only three things as if there is a religion. And now I found a very informative video, and it was created by the Korea Foundation. It's very short for each, but pay attention to what shamanism is doing, what the Confucianism, what Buddhism doing, and then I will bring some of the ideas how the Christianity pick up on few aspects or elements of each religion, try to contextualize in its own worship. That way you can see the kind of religious background of Christian worship service. Okay. Let's go. First of all, the shamanism.
From ancient times, the Korean people have held Samchinje, a ceremony to thank the goddess of birth, Sangshen, when they gave birth to a child. Did Kurakuri, the ceremony to drive out bad spirits when they got sick. And performed Chondokut, the rite to send the spirits of the dead to the underworld. Although foreign religions such as Buddhism and Confucianism were imported and flourished in Korea, none of them have ever succeeded in completely obliterating native shamanism. Mu, Korean shamanism, is enriched with the spirit of the Korean people. Korean shamanism, Muso, is a traditional Korean religion. Mukyo, Korean shamanistic religion, thrived among the common people of Korea, even when foreign religions such as Buddhism, Confucianism, and Christianity were introduced to Korea. Mukyo is basically polytheism, and consequently, the followers of Mukyo believe that inanimate objects, such as a piece of wood or stone, had a spirit, just like living things. Is a traditional ceremony performed in Mu. It is a ceremony in which the priestess of Mu, Mudang, offers sacrifices and begs the gods through singing and dancing to change the fate of humans. A mudang, the Korean shaman, carries out various functions, such as the jobs of a priest, priestess, prophet, healer, and artist. Mudangs are usually divided into gangshimu and seisepu, and most Korean shamans are females. Gangshimus are those who become shamans through spirit possessions. The purpose of the ritual is for the shaman to become one with the spirit. When the spirit comes to the shaman through intense movements, the shaman gives prophecies about the future of man. At this time, not just the expression of the shaman, but the movements of her hands and feet are not humane anymore, but that of the spirit. Seisepus usually become shamans by their birthright. There is no advent of the spirit for seisepus, so they don't place importance on their costumes. They usually wear clean white shirts and skirts. Where there is a big ceremony going on, they put on white traditional Korean overcoat and a conical hat. Shamans who preside over the ceremonies must know the laws of shamanism.
He's a man, by the way, and the woman's costume.
Perform dances in accordance with shaman music, as well as play act and tell stories. These ceremonies that the shamans carry out are rituals and an art. It has also been published in literature, and it is an aggregate of religious culture, in which the tangible and intangible cultures are combined together. To Koreans, shamanism is not some primitive religion of uncivilized people, or an ancient religion that is fading away. It is the spiritual home of Koreans that has been with Korea throughout its history and still lives and breathes in modern Korean society.
What is a lot about the Buddhism? Shamanism. This is very much the generalization, but there's a couple of things. First of all, the present world and the supernatural world, they are connected. So the existence of a supernatural world is not in question. The question is how those two things are connected. It's a connection through shaman. The shaman is one as one sees the prophet and prophetess and also priest. And the shaman is, though she is a human being, and yet through particular kind of activities, and the spirit is coming in. And then why the people then try to appease the supernatural spirit, so to speak? Because they believe that the spirit in the supernatural world will actually control what's happening in the present time. So when you're sick, it has to do with you have not really satisfied the spirit out there. And that's why you're providing a lot of food and great color and other things in order to make the spirit happy. Then the spirit will not bother you and how you live your life here. And so the shamanism is very much connecting with supernatural world and the present world, the importance of shaman, and also importance of the practical aspect of life. Your health, your long life, your wealth, all those things are connecting with the supernatural spirit. Then when the Christianity came along, they pick up and very easily. Do you know what do they go to pick that up? The concept of a priesthood. The shaman becomes a shaman through the birth. Look at the book of Leviticus. The Levitical priest, they are in the particularly the family tree, isn't it? Judahite cannot be a priest. Only Levites is going to be priest, because there's a family tree. There's similar kind of things. It's readily acceptable. Whatever the Old Testament says about priests and sacrifice, and the Koreans and says, yeah, we already know that, because we've been experiencing so many of those things. So the concept of a priesthood is very important. And also, you will notice that in shamanism, only one person shows, so to speak, isn't it? The shaman is doing all things. The rest of so-called congregations or people, they are not participating in these rituals. And so think about the, some of the tragic things happening in the mega church in Korea nowadays. And the pastors have a superpower. As all those things are very readily understandable when you're coming out of this kind of the religious background. Then,
now let's looking at the Buddhism, which has been the national religion of Goryeo dynasty. It's almost about 450 years of the national history, which means 450 years, the Korea is influenced by the Buddhism. The shamanism is the folk religion which has been pervasive throughout all history. Now in a particular time period, around 938 to 1492, Korean history that is controlled by this Buddhistic ideology. So let's see how the Buddhism.
Among 4,500 small and big mountains, you will never fail to find an old Buddhist temple. To Korean people, Buddhism is more than just a religion. It is the heart of Korean culture. Along Protestantism, Buddhism is one of the most believed religions for Koreans today. A variety of Buddhist cultures, such as tea ceremonies and cultures of food, are deeply embedded in everyday lives of Koreans. For example, temple stays have made their mark as a symbol of Korean culture. More than just a unique opportunity to experience Buddhism, it provides a peaceful place for rest and meditation. Thus, Buddhism is kept alive in the modern society in many ways. Originating from India, Buddhism spread along the Silk Road to China, Korea, and Japan. The spread of Buddhism played an important role in bringing East Asia together. Korea, China, and Japan each had their own unique Buddhism, which created East Asian Buddhist culture. Chinese Buddhism, influenced by Buddhism from India and its northwestern regions, had diverse aspects of ideology and artistry. However, Pure Land Buddhism is the mainstream Buddhism in China today. Affected by Taoism, religious precepts are practiced with importance, especially when it comes to food. Buddhism in Korea not only served as a religion, but it also played a valuable role in ethnic Korean culture. Buddhist culture blended well with traditions, such as ancient beliefs and shamanism, thus beginning the development of a national culture. In the case of Japan, esoteric Buddhism and Buddhism affiliated with Shinto flourished, quickly pushing the once practiced Zen Buddhism out of the picture. Korean Buddhism was a significant influence to East Asian Buddhist culture. Buddhist monks from Korean Peninsula notably affected different sects of Buddhism in China, and also led the influx of Buddhism in Japan. The most distinctive trait in Korean Buddhism is Zen Buddhism, derived from Mahayana Buddhism. Zen Buddhism is about searching for the inner Buddha by practicing discipline. The ultimate goal is to reach Nirvana. Zen Buddhism flourished in Korea, despite not having been successful in China or Japan. And to this current day, it still remains intact. The philosophy of patriotism is another unique characteristic of Korean Buddhism. Determined to protect the nation with Buddhism, cultural heritages like Tripitaka Koreana were created. Whenever the country was invaded, Buddhist monks participated in warfare and fought as monk soldiers. Korean Buddhism also takes pride in the quality of its arts and cultures. Many of the Buddhist cultural assets in Korea are on UNESCO's World Heritage List in recognition for its historicity and artistry. Although Joseon Dynasty's Neo-Confucian movement suppressed Buddhism in the past, and Western religions have captured the hearts of Koreans in the present, deep down inside, Korean people still harbor Buddhist culture. This is because Buddhism has stayed with them throughout history as Koreanized Buddhism.
You can see Buddhism is a little bit different, but Buddhism brought,
Buddhism brought so-called philosophy, thought. But the shamanism is the identity of a Korean culture. The Buddhism is heart of Korean culture, as it describes. So the concept of sin, concept of heaven and hell, concept of salvation, concept of even worship, all those concepts are actually what the Buddhist influence. We can clearly see how they, particularly how they actually worship. In according to the shamanism, only one person is doing all things. A very active motion. What about the Buddhism? Do they have active motion? No, it's a very meditative. Everybody, even the participant on Buddhistic rites, they simply sat down and they meditated. And 95% of a Buddhistic worship service is a repetition of a particular the Sanskrit text. Keep on repeating, 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 over and over again. By doing so, your mind is clear and you're arriving in the self-awakening, and you're arriving in so-called heaven or nirvana, the self-discipline. So it is how you reach to the highest form of a perfection. So that the Buddhism brought some of this kind of conceptual aspect of Christianity later on. Then what the Christianity will learn from this? And try to understand the concept of God and concept of all these important doctrinal aspects using the Buddhist terminologies. That way, the Koreans can easily understand, oh yeah, yeah, we know what it means. But simply changing the name of God a little bit. Of course, and that was kind of contextualization, maybe a little bit different later on. But initially, that is the how the Korean Christianity spread around, because they are already understand those, what it mean sin, what it mean heaven, what it mean hell. They understand those things instinctively, and now they need terminologies and to capture that ideas. Then the third major one is Confucianism. See that how the shamanism, Buddhism, and Confucianism are different. Okay, let's look at the Confucianism.
the traditional religion of the courteous people of the East. The spirit of filial piety and loyalty. A religion, philosophy, and culture. Confucianism in Korea. Confucianism is the iconic religion of China, which was founded by the Asian philosopher Confucius. And further developed by Mencius and Sun Qi. It is a code of ethics and politics which has spread throughout the Far East, including China, Korea, and Japan. Confucianism was first spread to Korea from China during the period of the Three Kingdoms and was embraced by the Joseon Dynasty as a political philosophy. It especially flourished during the mid to late Joseon period, producing many notable scholars in the process. Through its major works of writing, such as the Four Books and the Five Classics, it has taken root not only as a religion, but also as a system of thought. Among them, Sanggamuryun is the codes that must be kept between the king and his subjects, parents and the children, and husbands with their wives. Sanggamuryun has long been respected as the fundamental ethics of Korean society. Many educational institutions based on Confucianism were founded all over the country, and government officials were chosen through a civil service exam, which was based on the classic texts of Confucian literature. Also, weddings, funerals, and ancestral rituals based on Confucianism were practiced by families throughout the nation. The religiosity of Confucianism can be best seen in its various ceremonies and rituals. A ritual commemorating Confucius and his disciples, the Seopjeongdaejae, is the quintessence of such rituals in East Asia. The Jongmyojae commemorate the ancestors of the king and royal family. It is one of the most ancient rituals being performed today. The Jongmyojae-ryeak is royal ancestral ritual music in which 22 songs consisting of instrumentals, vocals, and dance are performed along with the Paremu dance. Known as the courteous people of the East, Korea's values of filial piety, loyalty, and respect for elders stem from the tradition of Confucianism, which took root as a religion, philosophy, and culture.
Of course, there is dispute whether Confucianism is a religion or is it simply ethical teaching.
because the religion is just a Western terminology that we use it, but it is very much is the way in which the one connecting, relating to each other. Shamanism brings a very foundational idea of Korean culture, and the Buddhism brings the philosophical terminologies, concepts. Now the Confucianism brought the social order, harmony. How do we deal with the one-to-one? How do we deal with me and King, and me and my wife, and me and my kids, and all the social orders are very important. So I'm simply giving you a very, and only to symbolize and what each religion is, has been doing all those things. So then let me make a 3 points out of all this religious background. The first point is, all these religious ideas are not really stagnant, which means one religion replaced by the another one. It doesn't work that way. In Korean ideas, all those religious ideas have been very fluid to each other, intermingled. So when the Christianity came along, then the ordinary people already know there is a supernatural world out there. They already know the importance of a pastor. They already know there is a concept of sin. They already know that how do we deal with our brothers and sisters, loving our neighbors as yourself. They already have those concepts clearly because every kind of religious ideas has been mashed together. So when you see a red round Korean, and you can see in terms of their thinking, they are very much the Buddhist. In terms of their when they are in the trouble in their life or their health, they are shamanistic. And in terms of how they be courteous to each other, how they deal with it, how they bow down, they are very Confucian. All those three things are come together very much. So the first point is all the religious backgrounds are very fluid. They are all intertwined. So there is no one dominating to the other. All those things are part of the Korean psyche, I would say. And second important point is the revolutionary effect of Christianity. When the Christianity they arrived, and that changed the whole ethos of how to think about reality. See, all these three religions, the common ground is this. It's always focusing on how we do to God, right? How we appease God, how we become a Buddha, how we become a very pious and very courteous people to others. So it's always on us. But Christianity is not about us. It's about what God was doing. It's a completely different way of looking things. You see that even yesterday, last night, the Exodus. The great things about the Exodus is the first evidence that God is actually incarnated. God actually coming down. God came down to the top of Mount Sinai and then called Moses, go up to the top of Mount Sinai, and God came down from the top of Sinai to where the Israelites were, in tabernacle. And of course, in New Testament, God is incarnated in human being. So in Christianity, the entire understanding of religion is what God is doing to the humanity. It's not how the humanity is doing to God. Because of that, the Christianity brought complete different kind of conceptual revolutionary effect. Think about that. According to the Confucius ideas, there are educated people, elite people, there are farmers and different caste system. But Christianity says we're all equal in the eyes of God. We are all created according to God's own image. What are revolutionary ideas? Concept of justice, concept of equality, concept of self-sacrificial love. Those things are what the Christianity brought to the Korean soil. And it gives you a complete reformation. The third thing that I'll do, even though Christianity is revolutionary at the beginning, but the local culture cannot be simply eradicated. As I mentioned, that all different religious ideas are come together, intertwined. It's not one religion replacing another one. So that sooner or later, as time goes by, only starting from the 1900 on, the Christianity Protestant missionary came in 1886, so that it's about 20 years later on, the Confucianistic, Shamanistic, and the Buddhistic, that tendency is now slowly changing the revolutionary aspect of Christianity. That is a kind of a distinctiveness of Korean Christianity, particularly in worship service as well. So that from the beginning, the woman was very, very important, as a shaman was a woman. So the Christianity spread around the so-called Bible woman, the woman who carries the Bible, go around the local places sharing the Bible, because it's a very easy way of communicating to ordinary people, right? But as soon as you enter into the 20th century, around the 1900, hey, woman has to go down, because according to the Confucianist mindset, woman belongs to home, not in a public place. That is, now the man becomes a powerful authority figure. That is how the Confucianism and fueled that one. So, according to my own research, around 1927, there was a huge controversy in Korean church in talking about whether or not the woman should be ordained. Can you believe that 1927 in Korea, talking about women's ordination issues? What about the CLC? When was it? We are very, very early on. But of course, that particular controversy was killed because of Confucianistic identities. And that's why that whole issues of a woman is fully participating in ministry is finally brought around about 1975 in the PCUSA side of a Christian church. So that much this the culture and the religious identity is so much ingrained in how you're worshiping. Then the question remains that whether or not Korean Christian worship practice is simply recontextualization or is reconceptualization. By changing the context, what about the content? Well, the content has been changed. That is a big question. So that's the missionaries' struggle, that's the Korean Christians' struggling. That coupled with another history. So looking at the second part, in the political and economic context from 18th century. And within 100 years of Korean history, and that has been the most tumultuous time in Korea. So look at the, I gave you all the big questions, and under Imperial Japanese rule, and almost the 35 years of colonization, and the Korean War with the Civil War, which is the bloodiest war that I ever fought. And then looking at the South Korean and the post-war economic growth since 1960 on. So you know Samsung and Lotte and all those things. In the Korea, the South Korea is probably the size of state of Ohio. But in terms of world economy, it is 10th or 11th. Think about it. That happened within 40 years. Of its history. So that's the post-war growth. How do you achieve that? Because there's a military dictatorship. The dictators always try to increase the economy by suppressing the voice of dissent, the voice of a people. And, you know, when you're hungry, you go along with it. But as soon as your stomach is filled with the good food, then you now begin to talk about human rights. The rights of our laborers and all things. How the Christian church and incorporate that reality into its worship service. I will talk about that. Because without it, the worship service doesn't have any relevance to the Korean people. And then here, 1993 was the first time that the presidential change from former military generals to the political activists. So after 1993, then there is so-called sunshine policy. And the South Korea is wants to get along with the North Korea. And because of that, the president received the Nobel Prize, Nobel Peace Prize, and all those kind of activities went on. And then finally, the Asian financial crisis, 1997, which is, we already know the economy went down, so Korea's the grading system went down, and the Korean currency rate has been dropped. So there is a huge turmoil going on. That is a part of globalization. So how the Korean small nation can actually survive in this world economy. That's the whole the political and economic situation. How the Christianity adapting itself relevant to this particular context. So let me make a couple of points. The first point, it has to do with, throughout this, the political and economic situation, the church functions very, very significant. Particularly when you're fighting against Japanese colonization, church was the mechanism to bring all these independent fighters and then the freedom fighters into that. And similar things are happening in the United States as well. So church has been vital in terms of bringing out the self-identity, self-independence of a Korean nation from Japan, and as well as the fighting forces come together throughout the Korean War and Civil War and so on and so forth. So Christianity is the really a function, the nucleus of finding Korean identities, unlike Buddhism, unlike the Confucianism, unlike the Shamanism. They lost the relevance to the Korean politics, Korean economy. It was Christianity and to be part of that. And second thing I will say, the Korean church now particularly focuses on the suffering of a people. That's why Book of Exodus is very, very much relevant. It's almost exactly what the Old Testament Book of Exodus is saying to the Korean people, because they themselves are being oppressed by the 40 nations, by the UN and Soviet Union and China and so on and so forth. So then the Korean Christians can easily identify themselves as the Hebrew slaves. So the Exodus is a very much important book, and since we are dealing with Exodus in this. So the Korean church has to deal with the suffering and oppression. That translating into particular practice, I will talk about that. And then number three, the first thing is, now then, the Korean church is split into two different parts. One part is simply focusing on the spiritual side. So that's why there is a so-called gospel of prosperity. The Pentecostalism is going into that direction, particularly influenced by the shamanistic tendencies. So this world is so much oppressed, so much bad things going on, so much injustice going on, so we can simply look up to eschatological horizon. At the end of world, that everything will be vindicated. So neglecting, ignoring present reality, looking forward in the future. Meanwhile, we need to be fed. We need to have a very practical means of to survive. That's why the prosperity gospel is really taken upon since 1960 on. And this world, the largest church, you may have heard, 200,000 church members. And it's incredible when you go and to see the worship service. And another side is exactly opposite side. The churches should be with the people. And churches should be with the people so that in the there is no, in a sense, the building is emphasis, no hierarchy emphasis, and then the pastors and then all the leadership group of people simply live with the people, the laborers, and the factory workers, and all those oppressed people, women, and so on and so forth. It's completely in two different sides. Of course, major part of Korean Christianity try to stay in the middle so that they don't go right or left, they right going to the middle. And so that, you know, once in a while they talk about this, talk about that, but they always try to keep everything in the house. So we do have a president, new president, who is also a Christians or Catholics or Presbyterians, and they all come along, but there is clear disconnect with the politics, all other things. Yes.
Considering since the 1950s a severe dictatorship in North Korea,
right?
Are there Christians, are there Christian churches in secret in North Korea?
Well, I think there is some sense that there is still the undergrounding Christians in North Korea. Of course, North Korea is a propagandistic church established in Pyongyang, and some of the CLC pastors have actually been there, Korean CLC pastors have been there to preach. So there is some kind of cover up there. But since 1988, and there was a great movement of a reunification. So how the Korean Christians prepare themselves for the reunification. If this economy or politics doesn't work, then probably religious effort may be the way to reunify the entire North Korea and South Korea. So that this 1988 is kind of a turning point, and to go into that, that concept of Jubilee, is the one. The Council of Jubilee is the biblical foundation to focusing on the reunification of North and South Korea. And if you're interested in how the Korean biblical scholars interpret the Bible throughout this particular way, then come to my lecture. February 18th, Tuesday, I'm giving a lecture at the Miller Center with the lots of slides. So I'll give a full-blown aspect, how do they actually utilize the biblical text in order to give up some message for this divided nation situation. So, and by having this, this is only background, and we have only 5 minutes left. This is a background. See that there's a lot of things to have this undergrounding and background. Then, let me simply focusing on a couple of things. Characteristics of Korean Christian worship service. And I'll give you some of that. But probably those things are very much what I already did. First of all, the Bible-centered worship. The Korean Christian, in particular, I'm talking about the Protestant aspect, not the Catholic side. The Protestant aspect of worship service always focusing on the Bible. Because, when the Protestant missionaries came to Korea, they translate the Bible in vernacular Korean script, Hangul. Because Korea was completely infused with Confucianism, so that there's an elite group who knows Chinese characters. So that when the Catholic Jesuit priest came along, they translate the Catholic Catholicism and also teachings of the early fathers translated into Chinese. So that only upper class people can know about what's going on. But Protestant missionaries, they came, they translate Bible into Korean vernacular script so that the common people can actually learn the script and read and educate themselves and also understanding the Gospels. That is a revolutionary fact. So that the worship service is centered around the Bible. Bible message is key. And that is also related to the Buddhism. Think about Buddhism, and they have a great script. They write it down, repeating the same kind of short scriptures. So that the Korean Christians, and they are memorizing scriptures, reciting memory and scriptures in great deal. And that's the part of how they express their devotions. And attitude toward the Bible. Koreans understand the Bible and not as a Western academy is looking for. The Koreans understood the Bible as a letter sent by God. This is a love letter. Because they already have a concept of a sacred text from Buddhism, from Confucianism. Think about it. Do you think that Confucianists and the Buddhists will ever analyze their text? Ever criticize their text? No. Analysis and criticism is a Western idea. They simply memorize, meditate, they simply chew on those texts. They don't really, you know, take it out, this is a verb, this is a noun, and how they relate. They don't do that. They simply repeat it, memorize. So the Korean Christians, when they're looking at the Bible is a love letter sent by God so that they have to memorize it into their heart rather than actually analyzing it and studying for it. When I came to United States and studying at Princeton Seminary, the most difficult part for me is writing a paper. We don't write a paper as normally I now require, and Jen was my student, require the students to write it and very analytically, critically. The word critical doesn't have any vocabulary in us. We simply recite what the teacher said, then that's good enough. So I simply summarize what the professor said, and of course that's F. Because that's not how you do that. You have to have a critical thinking, right? Because that's a different attitude toward the Bible. So I have a little paragraph for you. That's the way that Koreans understand it. And yet they love Bible so that they have a long and the Bible study and going on. And every single week and sometimes and more than and once. And the second thing is a prayer-centered worship. Look at the Buddhism, praying, meditating. So the praying is a very integral part of Christian worship service. There are several different kinds of form of it. One is a dawn prayer meeting, you know, the 4:30 in the morning and 5:30 in the morning. When you go to Korea, if you do not have a dawn prayer meeting, then you are not a Christian church. So 4:30 in the morning, 2,000 or 3,000 people gather around in a sanctuary. Before they do anything on that day, they worship, they pray, and then they go to their go home and go to school and do that. And my father was a pastor, and we have to have a morning prayer meeting after dawn prayer meeting at the church. So we have to have it twice, at the church, at home. Otherwise, we cannot have even breakfast. Sometimes I got late at school because we had to have that. Why? Look at the Buddhism. Buddhism has 5 or 6 different worship services every time. Entire day is orchestrated with the worship. That is influence. Well, Catholics have their the monastery experience. Very similar things. The Christianity, the down prayer meeting, that is a very famous. Another one is concerted prayer, audible prayers, which is praying aloud simultaneously. That's not a confusion. That's not a chaos. You know what you're praying, but you're praying aloud in one voice. And then there are 1,000 people who are praying at the same time in a loud voice and praying up to God. Just hearing that sound. Why they are doing it? Because Koreans, as you know, we have been oppressed, we have been suppressed so long. Throughout 4,000 years Korean history, we never invaded any other countries, but we have been invaded so many times by other countries. So think about the geopolitical locations. Urban China, huge empire, and Japan is an islander, and then now Korea is bridge. Just like Israel, Hittite, Mesopotamia, Babylon, up there, and Egypt, down there. Only one little strip, that is Israel, isn't it? So that is the kind of a channel of it. So throughout the entire Korean history, we have been really oppressed. So that we have so-called Han, overlaid emotional, suppressed kind of suffering. That has been accumulated so much. Then how do you lay it out? How do you cure? You have to shut it out. To whom? The God who hears you. That's why not only sing together, but praying together in that one voice, loud voice. That has been and the signature of Korean worship service. So the prayer is not simply one part of a worship. Prayer is an oil in your engine. Engine without the oil cannot function, isn't it? So every single little aspect of a Christian worship service has a prayer component in it. And when you go to a Korean church, and sometimes this is very typical, when the pastor prays or elder prays, then as soon as everybody says Amen, then you have about 10 or 20 seconds of silence. That's your time to pray. Even though there is a public prayer led by pastor or elder, representative of congregation, you also participate in that silent prayer alone. And then after the worship service, after the sermon, and of course pastor says, let's pray, then everybody prays. That is quite of the practice. And third, so there is some Korean languages that I created on hand. Third one is a revivalistic and the mission-centered worship. Because the Koreans experience a redemptive love of God and they have to share it, that is very much influenced by the Confucianism. Confucianism, if the king says, do this, then there is no quarrel. You got to do it, right? It's very hierarchical sense. If God redeemed you, then God commands you, love your neighbors as yourself, and go preach the gospel, then you got to do it. There's no quarrel. So in case Korea is a proportionally speaking, is the country that sent the many missionaries. Why? Because they take this kind of the mission seriously. That is fueled by the worship services. So the worship service is not simply gathering and to celebrating the redemptive of God. But worship service is now starting point of going out. So it is a different kind of the concept of a worship for Korean people. Of course, now these days, and people simply maintain and complain about, you know, sitting there and the worshiping at a particular church is satisfied, but that's not the original impulses of how Christians worked. And number four, politically conscientious worship service, because there is inner relationship between spiritual and political aspect. Another, the cultural aspect, the Taoism, is very influenced, the Korean version of Buddhism, or later on, the Jainism as well. It is kind of yin and yang. Have you heard of yin and yang?
Yeah.
And two parts, the two parts are such a, in a symbiotic way, it, when you come together, it's not one or the other. It is both and. So when you go to the Korean martial arts and other things, how do they greet? They greet this way. Force, right? Oppression, offense. This one, defense. Force and defense. That's very pervasive. Whatever you do, you don't have to choose one or the other. You can go both. And then as soon as you're interconnected together, then you go to different level of a relationship. So, now how the Korean worship service incorporated those political aspects is this way. Looking at someone using Korean words, different words. Prayer of confession, you change the different words. And different instruments. And of course we do have a piano with the drums and other things. But some of the traditional instrument has been used. The jing and gong and as a part of those things. And also different kind of the languages that it uses. And we have sometimes we call madang of entrance. Madang means it's a place like this. Everybody can come in together. So madang of entrance, madang of words. So everybody's in the same place to hearing the word of God. Different words, different instrument, and different tune to actually use in order to understand the particular context. Here, and in this politically conscious worship service has no particular set of rites. It is very flexible. Every week, the worship liturgy is changed because life is changing. So in order to be relevant to the life, then the worship liturgy itself is changed. So when there is a particular political rest going on, then the worship service reflects. And so that the political aspect is always and alive. And also emphasis on communal meal. After the church, you have Korean food. You got actually meals. So when you go to a local Korean church, they always serve a meal. Because that's part of a worship. So worship is not starting from 9 to 10 or 10 to 11, and after your benediction is done. No. Communal meal and come together, and that's the part of worship. So that the koinonia is an integral part of the entire the Korean worship service. I have the examples, Korean kind of architects, Korean building of Korean church building. It's beautiful, and it all has the Buddhist elements, Confucian elements, and the typical the Korean traditional the house church is element. But some of those things probably already passed time. But let's finish this session with the hymns. Korean hymns. How's that? Korean hymns. So you can see this one is based on Gospel according to Mark. You know the story that Jesus calmed the sea, right? And then look at the when the words has been written is 1921, during the time of Korea's Japanese colonization. And then now so look at the 1967. That is a composer, it's a Korean composer. It's right after the Korean War. So expecting all those things, it has a very much the Korean tune to it. And also look at the translation of lyrics. There is no one verse is ending in and of itself. First verse is connected with the second verse. There's stories. It's not a one verse in and of itself and separated. So that sometimes in here, in our worship service, let's sing verse 1 and 3 as if they are a little bit independent in and of itself. You cannot do that in this hymn, because 1, 2, 3, 4 is all telling the story in a particular way. So otherwise, you will not understand all this. So let's have this tune that let me sing to you. All the four verses? No. So that you can hear the song of different kind of a flavor, different emphasis, and different kind of the particular Korean traditional instrument can go along with it. And that is how we, and I myself, are much, much accustomed to express my Christian identity.
It has emotional waves.
Yes,
to it.
It is indeed. The words itself and also tune itself has that emotional kind of the energy in it. Arira is also one of those. Yes. Well, our time is up, but if you'd like to talk, if you have any questions, then I'm here. I can entertain your questions. Maybe. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. And I hope you'll have a good the closing worship service. And then when you go back home, and drive safely, and the God's traveling mercy and blessing with you.
Thank you.